Thank you for listening to the show on Really Big Something Channel.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Ooh, the wheel in the sky keeps on turning. I don't know what I'm doing.
It is the Savage Nation. And I'm not going to read gossip from the internet and call it a radio show. Okay? I think you've had enough of that for a year straight. Anyone can go to the top five websites and get their news in about 13 seconds. I want to do something more useful than repeat gossip and make believe it's production. And I'm going to talk about saving the whales today. Now, before you turn that dial, pay close attention to what I'm going to say to you. The environment is considered a laughingstock to most doctrinaire conservatives. Knee-jerk conservatives think that anyone who tries to save the environment is an environmental wacko, a commie. This is the opinion that passes for intelligent discourse, when in fact it's our job as keepers of the planet, as shepherds of the planet, to protect the planet and all of its inhabitants, humans included, but not excluding the great animals such as whales, bears, tigers, rhinos, you get the picture, elephants. Now, I've touched on this subject in the past, but never went into it in any great detail. But today, we're going to talk about saving the environment and how liberals and conservatives look at it in different ways. One of the reasons that conservatives have turned off from the environmental issues is because the environmental movement has largely been taken over by communists who call themselves progressives, and they've used scare tactics and threats and whatnot to beat anyone up who doesn't agree with their flawed conclusions. Now, to turn this into a political show for a moment, President Trump, or incoming President Trump, has just appointed the president of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. He has enormous power. The Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson, is number one in Eagle Scout. That's the first thing I'm going to tell you about him, if you look up his history. That's very important that you understand why that's important. Eagle Scout, that means he's been in touch with the earth. He knows something more about the earth than the average doctrinaire, knee-jerk conservative who rarely steps outside of his own comfort zone, either the radio studio or a bulletproof house with bodyguards. So Tillerson has done, you know, his share of investigating the earth. He is probably a warmist to some extent, and you're going to hear more about this from the Trump campaign. I can guarantee you as I stand here, the meetings with Al Gore by Ivanka, the appointment of Tillerson, you can guarantee, almost guarantee what's coming is going to shock many of you. But Trump is going to come out and say that, yeah, there is warming, but they're going to play it both ways. They're going to whipsaw you. They're going to say, just like ExxonMobil did, yes, there is evidence of man-made global warming here and there, but we don't believe in carbon credits. Okay, good. Now, having told you what's coming, I'm going to give you some scientific evidence on some of these issues to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that there's almost nothing we can do to stop the trend towards a warming trend, because there is no warming trend. In fact, there's a cooling trend, but you don't want to scare people with that one. I want to talk about the evidence to the contrary of that presented by the great, great PhD scientist Leon DiCaprio in Trump Tower a few weeks ago. We know that Leon DiCaprio, in between acting the role of playboy or drug dealer or murderer, all around bad boy, somehow earned his doctorate somewhere along the way, we suppose, and he's an expert on global warming. In between flying on his Gulfstream and being on his yacht, he became an expert on global warming in between the girls and the yachts. But I think Leo may benefit from the actual science. And I'm going to talk about inconvenient research today, notably the Vostok ice core samples. Many of you have read Government Zero, my book before Scorched Earth. And if you read that, you know what I'm going to be talking about. It's a piece of evidence that must be included in any and all discussions about so-called man-made global warming. But I'll get to that later. I want to come back to the big issue of the environment, liberals and conservatives, and how we speak different languages on this. First of all, the important thing for you to know is that we on the conservative side of the band should own the environment. We should own the environmental issue. We shouldn't have let the Marxists take control of this issue with the scare tactics that have frankly hit them in the face. Because other than the academics and the businessmen who make a fortune off the global green mafia, very few people believe any of the statements that are being made because they've been making statements that are untrue. We all know that the evidence has been skewed, lied about, made up. The hockey stick data, for example, it's shown to be completely fraudulent. Does that mean that we as conservatives should just walk away from the whole issue and laugh about it and go about eating our cheeseburgers and say anyone who wants to save the trees or save the air or save the waters or save the elephants or save the whales is a commie wacko? Well, do so at your own risk of being a moron. If you want to think like a Neanderthal from another era, go ahead. But you see, I own the environmental issue. There is no one else in talk radio, nobody else in talk radio, who has my credentials to talk about it. And instead of hiding my background, why should I hide what I'm proud of? Why should I hide what I've labored so hard, the fields I've labored so hard in? First of all, without boasting too much, just a little bit, my plant collections, my botanical collections, are in 7 museums around the world, including a museum in London that I cannot visit, owing to the communists who run England. But put that aside, my plant collections are in Russia. Oh yeah, that means I'm a Russian spy. But my plant collections are also in the Bronx Botanical Gardens, the Bishop Museum in Honolulu, and many other places. The point is that 7 different collections of my plant collections are in different museums. Now, why is that important? Because if you're a plant collector and you're close to the earth and you observe botanical species over a long period of time and you compare them with past samples of these botanical species, you get to see certain things. Well, I've seen certain things and drawn certain observations. So I've worked in the environmental field going way back into the 1970s. In fact, one of my earliest and most popular books was called Plant a Tree, a Plan for Saving America, which was for regreening America, excuse me. I worked on that for 3 years, and I went city to city, state to state, and came up with plans for regreening America because I was like a Johnny Appleseed at that time. So I've been deeply involved in this. I've saved portions of little rainforests here and there. So it's important you know that this is not a Johnny-come-lately thing. And I'm putting myself out front on this because you're going to notice a change in me in 2017. I'm not just going to sit here and read websites, gossip from the websites on the internet, and turn it into radio shows. That's over. How much can you take of that? You can do it yourself. That's called talk radio by the numbers. It's a John Nagy radio show. Read a headline, make believe you wrote it, ask the people who are listening what they think about it, and go brush your teeth while they're answering you. We've all done it. It's time to put it behind us, and let's do something meaningful with the power of the broadcast world that we live in. And so, as I say, today we're going to focus on our great, great creatures, the cetaceans, the whales, and we're going to talk about some very brave people who run a ship called the Sea Shepherd. And they try to stop the evil Japanese fishermen and the Norwegian fishermen and the Russian fishermen from killing these magnificent creatures. And I admire them. I admire them enormously. We're going to have the man who created the Sea Shepherd program on the program at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk to them about whether they actually can save whales, what you can do to help save the whales, and why is it important for us to save the whales? Why do you give a darn about a whale? Why do you care about that? Well, if you studied ecology many years ago, you came to understand that we're all part of a large ecosystem. Whether you know it or not, even if you live in an insulated world of your own making, you're part of a larger ecosystem. You as a man, you as a woman, you're part of a large harmonium of living creatures. The earth itself is a living organism. And so when you come to understand what deep ecology actually means, You understand that if you poison the earth for whatever the reason may be, and you crack the eggshell of an eagle, and the eagle can no longer reproduce, you are the eagle. While the eagle starts to die off, and you don't care about it because you're not an eagle, you realize that one day you'll be poisoned by the same poison that was used to poison the earth that made the eggs too thin for eagles to hatch. And so that's what we mean by deep ecology. So that brings us back to the whales. Why do we permit in the year 2016 these throwbacks from Japan, from Russia, from Norway, from Finland, to kill these magnificent creatures, which have almost been hunted to extinction? Why does anyone on this earth need to kill a whale? There is no reason for it. It's pure, unadulterated throwback behavior. And these are the people who stop it. Now, it ties into the Trump campaign in many different ways. Trump, again, I will repeat again, has just appointed Mr. Tillerson to be Secretary of State. Mr. Tillerson is a former Eagle Scout, but more importantly, he is the chairman and CEO of Mobil Exxon, which has business interests drilling all over the planet. Mr. Tillerson has gone on record as a spokesman for Mobil Exxon, saying that he does believe there's evidence of global warming, but, and the big but is whatever he wants to make it into be. That's a very clever way of triangulating the opposition, is that you throw them a bone, you say that their positions have validity, but then you undermine them by not doing anything about it. I understand that. Look, if I thought that we could stop a trend towards warming or cooling as human beings, I would say it. The evidence does not support that, not at all. Does that mean I love pollution? I hate it. There is no man on earth who hates air pollution more than I do. I've run all over the globe to get away from pollution. I remember when I lived in Queens, New York when I was young. I remember when I lived in Forest Hills, New York before I left Forest Hills, New York. I left because the air was polluted. I couldn't stand it. Why was the air polluted in Queens at the time? Because they had no environmental laws to stop people from burning garbage in the incinerators in the apartment buildings in Queens, New York. And so you'd wake up to this horrendous soot that was falling all over the street, which you were inhaling, and I knew that if I stayed there, I would be sick, I would die a premature death, and I left for more pristine lands. Well, where are we today with regard to environmental regulations? Where are we today? Have we gone too far? Have we gone far enough? Do we actually understand this? And where will Trump go with this? I would think that he's going to move radically in directions you'll never, ever believe. He's going to embrace the Al Gore view of global warming. That's why he had Al Gore in the tower. That's why he had Leon DiCaprio in the tower. He's going to push the big lie, and then he's going to back off and say this or that and not do anything about it. That's going to be the game that's being played. It's the same reason that he had the vile rap star in the tower yesterday, is to make believe he really, you know, embraces that. But let's put the rap star aside. I don't want to revisit that story again. It's disgusting. And all I can say is that if you're a fundamentalist Christian and you voted for Trump, I know you were as sickened as I am by having that vile rap star in the tower embraced by the future president of the United States. It sickened me. I can't imagine how the Falwells and the Liberty University people must have felt seeing a man who promotes lyrics like that embraced by the president of the United States. This is not just a musician. This was not just a rap star. This is a man whose lyrics are pornographic and violent and anti-woman. They're everything that we're supposed to stand against. So excuse me for getting emotional about it, but don't accuse me of not seeing the truth. So when I come back, we'll talk about all of these topics right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to Michael Savage. Coming up at 3, it's Mark Levin on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
We're going to talk about the patriotic duty that people have to join the fight to protect the natural environment, not only of America, but of the world, and the land, and taking a tougher stance on protecting the animals, because in so doing, you will be honoring all creation, and you will demonstrate your respect that is part of your religious and political background by protecting America's natural environment. And I'm focusing today on the cruelty of whaling. Whales are the largest animals on the planet. which means killing them is very, very hard. The practice of whale hunting is one of unimaginable cruelty. They are also social animals. They know when they're being killed. And their friends in the pod know when their mother is being killed and pulled apart by the vermin from Norway. The vermin, the filth from Japan, the lowest form of humanity, are these whalers. They're the last remnant of a Neanderthal past. They're worse than ISIS. They're worse than ISIS because the whales have no guns. The whales have no way to protect themselves. They're some of the most gentle creatures on the planet. You ask people who go on whale watching, and you understand, like, people go in California to Mexico to watch whale watching, where they know that they're safe because the vermin from Japan can't kill them off the coast of Mexico. The lowlifes from Russia can't kill them off Mexico. The Norwegian lowlife homicidal maniacs can't kill whales down there in Mexico. So the whales have become friendly. And they come up to the tour boats and they actually rub their backs on the keel of the boats. And they pull up next to the boats and they open their big eye the size of a saucer. And they look in the eyes of the people looking at them because they're social animals. And they love human beings. And then we reward them for this love and this trust by butchering them in the most horrendous way you could ever imagine. We have to stop the cruelty of killing these animals. The demand for whale meat is falling, but still there are throwbacks in Japan who love it. And despite bans on commercial whaling that have been accepted by most countries, the evil throwbacks in Japan, Norway, and Iceland kill 2,000 whales between them each year and continue to trade in whale products, and I'm going to try and stop it. I was a very active protector of medicinal plants in rainforests for many years. I devoted my whole life to it at great cost to my family. It all worked out in the long run. But I could have been investing in real estate in Harlem in the years that I was trekking in the jungles of the South Pacific saving plants in rainforests. Oh, yeah, I could have invested in cheap real estate in Manhattan and been a big shot. I could have had a tower probably if I wanted it. But I've done well enough anyway. God has rewarded me because I followed what was right. Well, now I've decided what I'm going to do with whatever time I have left on this earth. I'm going to now focus all my attention on protecting the innocent whales, the innocent elephants, the innocent bears, and all of the other innocent creatures that are being butchered in the most inhumane way you could ever imagine. Are you a conservative and you're going to laugh at this and tell me you eat hamburgers and it doesn't matter? Well, my friends, think very carefully because you are the whale.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
You're listening to Michael Savage. Coming up tomorrow morning from 5 to 9, it's the KSFO Morning Show on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Just kill him. Kill him. Be a good conservative. Smoke a cigar, drink your scotch, and laugh at anyone who wants to save the animals. Because you're a strong man sitting there in your chair with your fat behind. No, laugh at anyone who wants to save the whales. Call them environmental wackos. Make yourself feel strong and tough. Well, slaughtering wildlife is one thing. Hunting for food is another thing. But conserving what is not yours to kill is quite another. Protecting ecosystems and species means you're protecting yourself, by the way. I've tried to explain to you by safeguarding the biodiversity of our balanced ocean ecosystems, including the whale, you are protecting yourself and your children. That's a hard thing for the average lunkhead to understand. But when you poison one part of the ecosystem, you poison it all. That's going to take some knowledge to get to that point. Joining us right now is Paul Watson, who actually was an original founder of Greenpeace. He then went off and created the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. He's calling us from Canada. Mr. Watson, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi. I'm calling you from New York, actually.
Okay, great. So, let's see, where do we begin? You were an original founder of Greenpeace. You then went off and created Sea Shepherd. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I left in 1977, nearly 40 years ago, because I just felt that I didn't want to be a protester. I mean, we have all the laws and rules and regulations we need to protect wildlife and habitats, but they're not being enforced. So I set Sea Shepherd up as an anti-poaching organization or an interventionist group, not a protest group.
Well, I've done a lot. I've given some funding to the elephant poaching, the anti-poaching people, and it's heartbreaking to see what they do to elephants in Africa. I watched a video the other night of your work, the Sea Shepherd people, trying to stop the Japanese whalers in the Antarctic. Can you tell us something about that program?
Well, the Japanese were ordered to stop killing whales way back in 87 when the worldwide commercial moratorium on whaling came in, but they continued. And a couple of years ago, Australia took them to court, and the International Court of Justice ruled that their whaling was illegal. The Australian Federal Court ruled that their whaling in Australian Antarctic waters was illegal, fined them $1 million, which they refused to pay. And the International Whaling Commission has said what they're doing is illegal. But nobody's actually taken any action to stop them. So that's why Sea Shepherd has been intervening, and quite successfully, to stop their program. And
you guys actually, you have steel ships that must cost a fortune to operate with full crews. Your budget must be very, very stretched, very thin. When you come upon Japanese or other whalers killing these animals, what do you actually do?
The main way to stop them from killing whales is to prevent them from loading dead whales onto the factory ship. And to do that, we block their stern slipway. If they can't load them, they can't kill them. And it's been quite a successful tactic over the years.
Do they fire any? Do they fire guns at you?
Oh, yeah. We get shot at. We get concussion grenades thrown at us. They ram our vessels. They try to profile us. I was struck with a bullet in 2007, but I had a bulletproof vest on. It gets quite violent. But I'm proud to say that we've never caused an injury, and we haven't sustained any serious injuries either.
But Paul, you're at war. You're at war with people who are flaunting international law, flaunting the humanity that any human being can understand. Why is it that the Australian government, for example, if it's in Australian Antarctic waters, have you requested the assistance of Australian naval frigates, for example?
Well, not only have we requested it, but most people in Australia have requested it too, but neither Australia nor New Zealand are intervening. They are very concerned about poachers, they say, but they don't actually do anything about it, and it's been really a mystery. When they were taken to court, they were taken to by a previous government. Now the new government that's comes in there, they give lip service to the fact that they're opposed to what Japan's doing, but they actually don't take any actions to stop it. So,
well, what is it? It's all lobbyists again. We're talking about the whales. So let's go into the water with you. You're a founder of this great operation, Sea Shepherd. You're all brave people, the men and women on that ship. I mean, you are putting your lives on the line. You could be doing other things to make a living, but you're so committed to saving these magnificent creatures that you go out there. And you have the law on your side, but the vicious, vicious people who are poaching the animals could care less. When you pull a ship up, let's put it this way. How many whales do you think you've actually saved this year? Any?
Well, since 2005, about 6,500 is how many we prevented them from taking in their quotas.
How do you know that for a fact, Paul? I'm not doubting you. I'm just curious.
Well, they set the quota every year, 1,035, up until last year, then they were forced to lower it. But so we take their quota, and we see what they get. And the ones that they don't get are the ones we save. We prevented them from taking them. So some years they got 30% to their quota, and one year they got only 10% of their quota.
Okay, we know we can help you. I'm going to give out your email, your website and all. I'm going to want people to donate money directly to you. I'm not looking to collect the money and give it to you. I want direct action to support Sea Shepherd. How many people do you have on each ship?
We right now have about 150 volunteers on the 8 different vessels, and they're involved in different campaigns. There's 2 of them that are down in the Southern Ocean that are operated by Sea Shepherd Global. We have 2 vessels in the Sea of Cortez working to protect the endangered vaquita, and we're doing that in partnership with the Mexican Navy. We're working with the Gabonese government to stop overfishing in their waters. We have 1 in the Mediterranean working with the Sicilian police to stop poachers. there. So it's a worldwide operation. It's 150 or so volunteers right now on the ships are from 25 different nations.
Hmm. Do you have what's your annual budget for the Sea Shepherd program?
About $12 million. It's a much, much smaller than, for instance, Greenpeace's $375 million. But, you know, we couldn't do what we do unless we had the passion and the dedication of the volunteers who were on our
team. Well, I'm right. That's why I have you on the show, because I've seen movies of you, videos of you guys. You're out there. You're not just putting out press releases and going to dinner with the senators. You're actually stopping these bastards from killing the animals.
Yes, and it is risky. For instance, Japan has a lot of economic power, and that's how they're able to get away with this. I mean, like Namibia couldn't do this, but Japan does it. And, for instance, one of the things they've done is they placed me on the Interpol red list to have me extradited to Japan for the crime of conspiracy to board a whaling ship.
Oh my God, that's awful. So you're on the wanted list for Interpol?
Yes, and the interesting thing about it is that nobody in the history of Interpol has ever been put on that list for that kind of a crime. It's for war criminals and serial killers. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't steal anything. I didn't damage anything. The charge is conspiracy, and that just goes to show you how much power Japan has. But it didn't stop us because, you know, the ships go down there. There's many captains, and the crews are from all over. So the ships can...
Have you ever lost a ship, Paul? Have they actually rammed your ship and damaged it so the ships don't operate?
A vessel that was working with us, the Audie Gill, was deliberately rammed and split in half in 2012. No, 2010, and that was a total loss. They had to pay, in the U.S. courts, they took them to court, they had to pay $2 million for that loss. But that's the only that one that was destroyed.
Paul, what kind of money is involved in this hunting of whales? Why do they do it? There are other ways to fill the needs of whale meat or blubber or oil. Why are they doing this?
Well, they actually don't do it for money. It's heavily subsidized. In fact, they even took $30 million from the Tsunami Relief Fund to give to the whaling companies. The reason it's being done is that in Japan, when politicians retire, they're given nice, cushy jobs in these government enterprises, and whaling's one of them. And they won't end whaling because these guys will lose their jobs. And the union that supplies the workers is run by the Yakuza. So that's the reason it continues to operate. But it doesn't make money. It hasn't made money. They've got 6,000 tons of whale meat in frozen warehouses right now that they can't sell. There's no market for it.
Yeah, that's another question. Have the Japanese people become enlightened enough to stop eating the meat of dead whales?
There never really was that much of a demand for it. I'd say about 1% of the population, when you poll them, have even tried it. So it's really being done as a subsidy for the industry. It has.
What kind of men do they use to go hunt these magnificent creatures? Where do they dredge them up from? Are these criminals? Who are they?
No, there's traditional whaling towns like Taiji in Japan where they kill the dolphins. And so there's a few towns that have been killing whales for, you know, 100 years. And so they get their workers from there.
Well, just because it's traditional doesn't mean it's sane or humane. And there are many things that are traditional that have been stopped. If you look in the Old Testament, they used to stone adulterers to death. They used to kill homosexuals. We don't do everything that's traditional, and I think that killing animals of this magnitude should be go by the way of the Stone Age mentality in the Old Testament, personally.
It's also critical because the Ainu people, the indigenous people of Japan, they used to go whaling, but they're prohibited by the Japanese government. So that's the actual real traditional culture, and yet the Japanese prohibit that. But they allow this to go on because elite politicians who've retired and are working for this whaling company, which is owned by the Japanese government, they don't want to lose their jobs. And also, there's one other reason. They feel that if they give in on whaling, they'll have to give in on their overfishing of bluefin tuna and other species, which, you know, they're driving slowly into extinction.
Mm-hmm. Let's for a moment talk about the realities of the animal itself. These are highly social animals, whales, aren't they?
Very social, very intelligent. And not only that, they're actually essential for the survival of life in our ocean. You know, since 1950, we've seen a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton populations in the ocean. One of the reasons for that is the diminishment of whale populations, because whales are really the farmers of the ocean. It's called the whale pump. They bring up nutrients from the depths and unload them on the surface in the form of their feces. One blue whale every day defecates 3 tons, and that's heavily rich in nitrogen and iron, the essential nutrients for phytoplankton. So it's the whales that keep the phytoplankton alive and thriving. And phytoplankton provides over 70% of the oxygen we breathe. And the reality of it is if phytoplankton goes extinct, we do too.
Wow, that's amazing. But I want to focus on the emotional issues of killing one of these animals. They travel in pods, don't they? I mean, how many animals generally travel together?
Well, there are pods. Some of them are loners, but like, for instance, sperm whales travel in pods. The large whales like blue whales and fin whales tend to be loners. But there's various cultures amongst the whales, of course. But, you know, I myself got so involved with this passion about it because back in 1975, a sperm whale could have killed me. That had just been harpooned by the Russians and chose not to do so. And I feel personally indebted to that whale for the fact that I'm still alive.
What do you mean? It looked at you and decided not to kill you in the longboat?
Well, what happened is that we were blocking the harpoons of the Russian whaling fleet, and the Russians fired a harpoon over our head, slammed into the backside of a female in the pod. She screamed and rolled over in a fountain of blood, and suddenly the largest whale slapped the water with his tail, dove and swam underneath of us, and hurled himself straight towards the harpooner. But they were waiting for him with another unattached harpoon, point-blank range, hit him in the head. He fell back in the water, screaming, blood everywhere, and as I looked at him, he suddenly saw me. I saw him dive and saw a trail of bloody bubbles coming straight towards us, and he came up and out of the water at an angle so that the next move was to fall right on top of us and crush us. And as I looked up into the eye of that whale, I saw, or I perceived, understanding that the whale understood what we were trying to do, because I could see the effort he made to pull himself back and slide back into the water, and I saw his eye disappear beneath the surface, and he died. And I, you know, my life was saved. But here's the other thing. I said, why? Why were they killing these whales? Because you don't eat sperm whale meat. The Russians were killing them for spermaceti oil, for high heat resistant lubricating oil. And one of the most prized uses for this was for the manufacture and intercontinental ballistic missiles. So I said,
oh my God,
we are destroying this incredibly beautiful, intelligent creature for the purpose of making a weapon meant for the mass extermination of human beings. And I said, we're ecologically insane. And
yeah,
that moment on, I said,
well, this is amazing. This is an amazing interview. It's far more involved than I had thought it would be. We're speaking with a man who created the Sea Shepherd Program, a long and rich program to protect animals in the ocean environment, notably the Sea Shepherd Program, as I said to you earlier, and saving the whales and the porpoises is one of their goals. He will take your questions when we return right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to Michael Savage. Coming up at 3, it's Mark Levin on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Okay, my friends, we're back with Paul Watson, the founder of Sea Shepherd. They've saved thousands of whales from the inhumane slaughter by Japanese and Russian and, I guess, other fishermen. Mr. Watson, are you welcome back to the program here? Can you give out an email or website or Twitter, whatever it is where people can donate money to your organization?
Yes, it's seashepherd.org, O-R-G, seashepherd.org.
It's, and it's S-H-E-P, right? S-H-E-P-H-A-R-D?
S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D.
H-E-R-D, it's a hard... Shepherd's a hard word to spell, by the way. You know, I just went on your website, and I see that you launched a new ship in April, the Ocean Warrior, that you had built just to outrun the Japanese whale killers. Where did you build that ship?
It was built by a Dutch company in Turkey that the money came from the Dutch Postal Code Lottery. They gave us 9 million euros to build it.
Isn't that amazing? Well, we're going to talk more about these warriors of the sea who are trying to protect our friends from the lowest form of humanity. Because if you let people kill animals like this, let me explain to you, all of humanity loses. Let's put it to you that way. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about a very important issue, saving the whales. Laugh if you will, but you're only laughing at yourself.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Thank you for listening to the show on Really Big Something Channel.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Well, I know it's a little unusual for the Savage Nation, but you know what? Hey, it's long overdue. Welcome back to the program, because we're talking about saving the whales. How do you like that? Isn't that a laugh line for all of you tough conservatives sitting there eating hamburgers somewhere in the safety of your own home? Maybe even smoking a cigar and laughing at the tree huggers and the environmental wackos. Well, I am a tree hugger and an environmental wacko, and I've been so my entire life. And I'm also a pretty good conservative politically. And so we're talking about saving the whales. Why should you do it? Well, we're talking with a man who can help you understand this. His name is Paul Watson, and he created a group called SeaShepherd.org. And I want you to go to SeaShepherd.org, SeaShepherd.org. Why don't you send them a Christmas present? They have a very small budget, $12 million. Greenpeace has a $330 million budget and does nothing. I mean, Greenpeace is a PR agency. Greenpeace is like the Sierra Club. It's all lobbyists. It's all politicians. They do nothing. They sit there with their legs crossed in an office somewhere in Washington and do nothing. These guys, Sea Shepherd, go out in ships and stop the vicious killing of these magnificent creatures. Now, what's interesting to me is that when you study a little bit more about this, you find out that while the Japanese are killing a high number of whales, the number one, the global leader in whale hunting is Norway. Did you know that? It's the Norwegians who are killing more than any other country. But the reason Japan receives the most criticism is because Japan has decided to continue whaling in the Southern Ocean. Japan is the only country to kill whales in international waters of the Southern Ocean, which was, by the way, declared a sanctuary for whales in 1994. Just so you know all of this. Boy, I wish to God that I could tell all of this to Donald Trump. Maybe I could reach him. God only knows. Paul Watson, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Paul, when an animal is hit with a harpoon, what happens to the other animals if the animal's not alone, if it's not a solo animal? What do the other animals do?
They used to actually, with whales, harpoon the calf so the mother would turn and protect it and then get the mother too. And with whales, they hit a female deliberately first so that the male will turn and protect it. So the others try to protect their own.
How do you know the difference between a female and a male animal from the distance of a ship?
Well, in a pod of sperm whales, the largest one will be the male. When it comes to, like, the humpbacks and the other whales, it's the mother is with the calf, so they can see the calf, so they can hit the female first. Or they hit the calf and then get the female to protect the calf.
Oh, God, that's so awful. Just the evil of mankind is enough to make you just want to kill somebody listening to the show. I don't know. I don't turn inward when I hear things like this. It makes me more violent than you could imagine. How do you guys control your instincts as warriors of the sea to not go out there and murder these people?
Well, you have to have a bit of a detachment, because we know that anger would just get us in trouble. So we're trying to be effective, and we're not going to be effective by losing our temper.
Well, that's very nice to hear. You know, I've been involved in protecting the elephants, and it's a losing proposition. because the poachers have gotten so vicious. They are funded by international criminal gangs and governments themselves. They're actually killing the anti-poaching soldiers who are out there trying to stop them. You know that, right?
Well, I do. I spent 6 months in 1978 tracking elephant poachers with the Kenyan Rangers, and yes, some of our Rangers were killed while we were doing that tracking.
So, do you have the equivalent of the anti-poaching anti-poaching army? I mean, you're using your ships to stop the whalers, right? But do you have the equivalent of armed men on these ships to protect you, if not the whales themselves?
No, we don't carry any arms at all, actually, except when we're working in partnership, for instance, with Gabon. We have armed Navy personnel on board to go after the poachers. We're working in partnership with the Mexican Navy right now to protect the endangered vaquita. They have the arms, but we ourselves, we don't carry arms.
Now, why is the Mexican government more activist in protecting the animals than the United States is, for example?
Really can't answer that. There's less than 50 vaquita left in the world, and I don't think Mexico wants to be embarrassed by, seeing the extinction of that species. The reason they're killed is they're a
I'm sorry. You're talking about a type of porpoise, I believe. Correct?
Yes, it's the smallest dolphin in the world, or porpoise in the world. And the reason they kill them is really the fishermen are after a fish called the totoba, which is about the same size as the vaquita. And the reason they're after that, it's endangered also, is because the totoba bladder is worth $20,000 in China, just the bladder. The rest of the fish is thrown away. And with that kind of price on its head, of course, there's a lot of people going after it. And
what do these throwbacks in China use the bladder of that animal for?
Some sort of snake oil medicinal thing that nobody really knows. It has no...
Why is it advanced so far ahead of so many other civilizations? How is it they're so stuck in the past when it comes to things such as killing bears, eating dogs, elephant ivory, killing whales, killing porpoises? Why is China stuck in some medieval view of the universe?
I wish I knew, but I do know that there's no scientific validation for any of these so-called cures of these exotic products that they're after. It's all superstition.
Well, they should probably be given a free supply of Viagra instead of killing these beautiful animals. They could probably buy that in a local pharmacy. Maybe that would stop them from needing their virility returned by killing an endangered species. But getting back to what you do in the oceans, how many ships are on duty right now, for example, in the Antarctic, to prevent the Japanese or to slow down the Japanese killing of these magnificent animals?
There's two ships in the Southern Ocean. That's the Steve Irwin and the Ocean Warrior. And the Ocean Warrior is the fastest vessel we've ever had. That's the new one that was just built. And so the others, we have two in the Sea of Cortez, one in the Mediterranean, one in the Canary Islands, and another one that's been fixed up and will be deployed out of Florida right now.
So you have crews. Are they all volunteers, the entire crew?
Not all of them, but, we have to sometimes pay for experienced people when we need them, helicopter pilots or engineers, but I'd say 90% are volunteers.
I mean, the captains, for example, running a ship in the Antarctic cannot be an easy thing to do as a former boater, even a current boater. You need very skilled captains on those ships. Who do you generally get to do that?
Experienced people. Our captains do have a lot of experience. I was took eight of those campaigns down to Antarctica. I'm not allowed to now because of the Japanese have this order out for me. But another an American, Adam Meyerson, is a captain on the Ocean Warrior. He's got a lot of experience. Sid Chakravarti from India is another captain with a lot of experience. Peter Hammerstedt. So we have a lot of captains. Una Leol, she's the captain in charge of the Vaquita campaign in the Sea of Cortez. What I started as an organization in 77 is now actually a global movement, which is what I've always wanted it to be. So it's not controlled by me. We all work together out of 40 different nations.
Of the your annual budget is $12 million?
Yes.
That's not a lot of money. I mean, compared to, you surprised me by telling us on the show in the last hour that the budget of Greenpeace is in the $330 million range. Is that true?
That's true. But I set up this organization at the beginning, and I said, we're not going to spend anybody's money on raising money. Greenpeace spends 70% of their budget on raising money.
Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar. Typical charity.
When people donate to Sea Shepherd, we want to make sure that that money goes to what they donated to. So that means that we don't do any self-promotion. We don't do advertising. So we've grown slowly by word of mouth. But I think that we actually get more done on the sea than Greenpeace with their big budget. And, you know, I was a director for the Sierra Club from 2003, 2006. I was really disillusioned with that, you know, $85 million a year, and I couldn't figure out what they were spending it on.
No, I don't think they can either. You have a ship called the motor vessel Brigitte Bardot, I noticed. What is that? What's the story on that?
Well, I took Brigitte Bardot to the ice floes off of Newfoundland in 1977 to oppose the seal killing there, and she's been a supporter ever since. So the Brigitte Bardot Foundation put up the money for that particular vessel.
Well, you took her, the actress, to the site?
Yes, I took her out, and her picture posing cheek to cheek with a baby harp seal made it to the cover of every magazine in the world at the time.
So she's been way ahead of everybody on the environment, hasn't she? Going way back to the beginning. So that's great. That's an interesting looking ship. It looks as though it has wings. What is that?
It was built as a vessel to race around the world and set a world record. It was actually had a really unromantic name of cable and wireless. And then we named it the Gojira after Godzilla, because I couldn't resist the headline in Japan of Godzilla attacks whaling fleet. But then the only thing scarier than Godzilla are Godzilla's lawyers, and they told us we couldn't use the name. So
you're dealing with Hollywood. I know how that could be. What would it cost for one of my listeners? We don't know who's listening to this show. It's heard across the globe. It's on hundreds and hundreds of stations and drive time on the East Coast. You're getting enormous listenership, and I want them to call to go to www.cshepherd.org and donate as much as they can. What if someone is a really rich person and they want to give you a lot of money? Could they have a ship named after them?
Absolutely. Our ships are all named after people who've been patrons, like Bob Barker and Sam Simon, for example.
How much would it cost to have a ship named after yourself?
Well, it depends on the kind of ship. It'd be $250,000 or $5 million. Bob Barker gave us $5 million to get the Bob Barker.
Interesting. Well, no, you don't know who's listening to these radio shows. But getting back to the killing of these magnificent creatures, when I saw the video the other night, I became furious. My blood was boiling. And I was also impressed with the bravery of the people on your ships, both men and women, incidentally, on the whaling. Isn't Japanese whaling regulated by international law?
Oh, it is, but they just simply ignore the regulations. They've been ordered to not do this by the International Court of Justice, by the International Whaling Commission, by the Australian Federal Court. They just ignore that. In fact, they were fined $1 million by the Australian Federal Court, and the response is to simply refuse to pay the fine.
Let's take a couple of quick calls for our guest, Paul Watson, from SeaShepherd.org. Let's begin in New York City with Ed on line 7. Ed, welcome from WABC. Quick comment or question for Paul.
Michael?
Yes, go ahead fast.
Oh, yeah, I applaud you for putting this type of a show on, and Mr. Watson also. Is there anything that can be done by our government or anybody else that could impose sanctions on these people that aren't already there?
Okay, we'll take that question on the air. What can the people who are listening do to help other than give money? Is there anything they can do, Paul?
Well, actually, you know, the question is that there are laws in the U.S. that would stop whaling tomorrow if they were implemented. The Packwood-Magnuson-Pelley Amendment to the U.S. Department of Commerce regulations says that any country that violates the international whaling regulations will be embargoed. But every president from 1980 on has refused to implement this. The law's there, but it's just simply not put into effect.
And that's because of lobbying, no doubt, by lobbying? Is that it, basically?
Yeah, it's just in pressure from the various countries, trade agreements, those kind of things. The law is there. It's just not being enforced.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I'm doing this, Paul, is because we have a new president coming in. I had an awful lot to do with getting him elected. I am going to try to do everything I can to make certain that fewer whales are killed in the coming years rather than more whales are killed, because people probably think that since Mr. Trump is a conservative, all environmental regulations will be lifted and things of this nature will get worse. I'm not so sure of that. And I'm doing a show like this to awaken a largely, I would say, conservative audience to this horrendous travesty of killing whales, because as I said at the beginning of the show, we are the whale. They don't seem to understand the connection in the ecosystem between the whale and themselves, between the eagle and themselves, and I try to explain it as such. If you poison the environment with toxic chemicals, and then the eagle cannot hatch eggs because the shells are too thin, it is not just the eagle that is dying, it's the man. Man is also dying because we're all part of the same ecosystem. And you today explained how the whale, in producing waste products that float to the surface, that produces phytoplankton, and the phytoplankton, etc., is part of our survival. It was astounding to me. In conclusion, could you repeat what you told me about the phytoplankton dying off as a result of the killing of the whales?
Well, since 1950, there's been a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton. And one of the reasons for that is the diminishment of whale populations. Every day, one blue whale produces 3 tons of fecal material, which is rich in nitrogen and iron. And that those are the nutrients that feed the plankton. So they're really the farmers of the ocean. And when you reduce whale populations, we reduce phytoplankton populations. And we killed 300,000 blue whales alone in the 20th century. And that's not counting all the other species.
And what does the phytoplankton do for the human species? How does that affect us?
70% of the oxygen produced on this planet comes from phytoplankton. The rest comes from trees.
Amazing. Well, look, we're going to have a few minutes at the bottom of this hour to finish this up. We're speaking with a man who has put his life out there to do this. He didn't do it just for the acclaim or to get an Academy Award. Go to cshepherd.org and make a big donation. I'll be right back with Paul Watson.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Michael Savage, weekdays from noon to 3 on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Well, we could talk for hours, and I'll have Mr. Watson back another time. Paul, are you there right now on the Savage Nation from cshepherd.org? Are you still with us?
Yes.
Paul, I see that 90% of the big ocean fish are gone. I can't believe what I'm reading here. The more I get into this, fish that we eat every day, tuna, marlin, what is it, all being depleted by overfishing?
Overfishing, and 40% of the fish is caught illegally by poachers.
So when I eat a piece of tuna or ahi, am I eating a fish that's in danger of disappearing?
We don't really know where that fish has come from. Quite a bit of it has come from illegal sources. For instance, last year we went after the Chilean toothfish poachers. That's Chilean sea bass.
Oh, boy. Look, Paul, can you stay on another few minutes after the turn of the hour?
Sure.
Please, everyone go to cshepherd.org, cshepherd.org, and I may raise money to create a ship called the Savage Nation. Maybe we'll raise $5 million and give it to them. We'll name the ship the Savage Nation and go some hunting together.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage. Now, more of the Savage Nation on Talk Radio 560, KSFO.
I know many of you can't listen to this. I had someone call me and say that she almost broke into tears hearing this whale sound. But, you know, I need to reach you to make you understand what we're talking about. So we're speaking with Paul Watson, who founded Sea Shepherd. And this group does things that are marginally legal. They cut nets. They block fishermen. They ram whaling vessels. And frankly, I approve of everything that they do. The fact of the matter is they're doing what governments should be doing and are not doing, because governments are filled with lobbyists, not people of any high moral character. And we, the people, have the power ourselves to control much of the outcome of this by not consuming the products, for example. You're buying ivory. Where'd the ivory come from? You're asking for wild fish because you're too good to eat farm-raised. When did you last go in a restaurant and say, oh, is it wild or is it farm? I'm too good to eat farm fish. I want that wild tuna. Or give me that wild marlin or the wild swordfish because I'm so special. Well, 90% of the ocean's large fish like marlin, tuna, and swordfish have vanished. Do you want to be part of the generation that kills off the ocean's last large fish? I don't. And so that's why I had Mr. Watson on thus far. The overkilling of whales, the overfishing of the large species of the ocean's large fish. Paul, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So what do people do in this situation? You stop eating fish altogether, or is there an alternative?
Well, the problem is there's too many people eating not very many fish. And so the alternative is really conservation. What we have are giant factory ships out there just taking in millions of tons, and it's that's what's causing the problem. And a lot of illegal fishing. For instance, we chased the tuna fish poacher, the Chilean sea bass poachers up from Antarctica. The pursuit of the thunder was the longest pursuit in maritime history. We chased it for 110 days, and the captain of that vessel sunk his own vessel right in front of us off of San Tome. And by the way, that's...
I saw that story. Why did they sink it when you caught up with them? Why did he do that?
They couldn't shake us, and they couldn't go into any port without us turning them over to Interpol, because there was Interpol warrants for them. And so finally they were running low on fuel, and the captain decided to try and destroy the evidence by sinking his own vessel. But we were able to board the sinking vessel and get the evidence, and then that captain's now doing 3 years in prison. And
really? I saw that you pursued this ghost ship, the Thunder, until it sank itself in April, and that captain was arrested by which country?
In São Tomé, Príncipe, off the west coast of Africa.
Wow. They probably have better environmental laws than we do here.
And that'll be actually on air on Animal Planet on Sunday. That whole pursuit is being aired on Ocean Warriors, which is the series we're doing for that.
Isn't that amazing? That's truly amazing what you people do. I was very moved to watch a show the other night. I think it was on Nat Geo. I don't know exactly where. And that's why I decided to do this show as a break from the normal fare of politics every day, because there's nothing more political than saving these magnificent creatures, is there, Paul?
Well, also, you know, I always consider myself a conservative, because there's nothing more conservative than conservation.
That, right. I've said that many times. At the end of the day, when you say to a conservative, are you an environmentalist, they turn their nose up and say, of course not. Well, then you're a conservationist. Just as Teddy Roosevelt was a conservationist, the whole issue of the animals and the environment really is a conservative issue, as you just said, because we should be protecting the planet and these great creatures, shouldn't we?
Yes, and the greatest conservation presidents were the Republican presidents, Teddy Roosevelt, Richard Nixon, for example. And, you know, Richard Nixon probably did more to pass environmental legislation than any other president in history.
Well, I'm sure he's hated by the true blue conservatives who would like to see all the animals on Earth killed for their pleasure. A renegade trawler hunted for 10,000 miles by vigilantes, that's your group. 110 days and across two seas and three oceans, crews stalked a fugitive fishing ship considered the world's most notorious poacher. So they're calling you vigilantes, are they, Mr. Watson?
Oh, they always call us that, but, you know, we get called a lot of names. But, you know, I was invited to speak to the FBI 1 year, and they actually paid me to come speak to them. And one of them said, well, you know, Sea Shepherd walks a pretty damn fine line when it comes to the law. And I said, yeah, well, who cares how fine it is as long as you don't cross that line.
What does the FBI have to do with poaching? Are they involved with this?
Well, no, they just asked me to. I guess they invited me as some sort of radical environmentalist to hear my side of the story.
Well, they wanted to make sure you weren't going to put a bomb in a mailbox. Okay, I understand. keep your enemies closer. Well, you guys are the good guys. You are the Sea Shepherds. There's no question about it. And apparently there are many governments on Earth who are friendly to you. I only wish that the awareness in America was higher as to the danger we are all in losing these magnificent creatures, and that the United States government itself turned in your favor, which I hope to lobby for on this radio program and in other ways. Again, I would recommend anyone listening to this program who was moved by what you heard to go to seashepherd.org. That's SEASHEPERD.org, and make a large donation. And, Mr. Watson, I'd like to have you back in the near future. Are you headquartered in New York right now? Is that what you said?
No, Sea Shepherd's headquartered in L.A.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
Well, I have a residence in Los Angeles I go to from time to time. The next time I'm going to go down there, which is in 2 weeks, I will email you and hope we can get together and talk about doing things together to save the whales.
Well, good. I'll be in L.A. all of January.
I won't be there in January. I'll be there in the last week of December, but we'll worry about getting together in another way. Paul Watson of Sea Shepherd, thank you so much for this time on the Savage Nation. Now, that leads us right back to the callers. That opens up all the lines at 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. We're talking about the benefits of saving the whales and other large creatures. We are talking about the bigger issue of the liberal-conservative dichotomy in environmentalism, because we all think that it's only liberals who are or should be environmentalists, and we turn our noses up at them saying they're all, quote, environmental wackos, but that's not the truth. The truth is we conservatives do, in fact, own the environmental issue, as we just discussed on this program, going back to Teddy Roosevelt, if not before then. Let's take some calls on the Savage Nation. WDRC Radio, Linda, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. I don't know the delay here. I guess Linda's not there because we had such a long wait. We didn't take any calls. Call screen is going to have to make sure they're actually there when I take them, because otherwise we're going to have no calls. Let's try WFJX Radio in Virginia. Andy on line 9. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Interesting topic. I just wanted to interject the angle that maybe a lot of your listeners don't know the full extent of the cognitive ability of the whales. They have a cerebral cortex, an outer mammalian brain, like human beings, elephants, primates. And I think it's a shame that they almost have a spirit, a soul, cognitive thinking, logical reasoning, memories, able to think abstractly possibly. And I think there's an issue here that goes above some of the other topics you're also raising that ties right into it, dovetails into it, that these are creatures that are not only magnificent, but they have thinking ability. They have, I dare say, souls.
Well, I don't know about souls, but I do know that a cognitive ability indicates something more so than a chicken, which has no cognitive ability, just to put the whole concept of what animals can be slaughtered humanely and which should not be. And the reason whales and elephants should be protected are for the very reasons you just mentioned. To me, it's a form of cannibalism. This is not hunting. This is cannibalism by what you just said. Now, are you a person who has studied this in some way or just read about it casually?
Just read about it. It's a shame that for a dollar bill with the dead president printed on it or a bar of gold, we're going to destroy and sell things and do this without, like, and this is probably part of the whole reason why you're raising this issue. What's the gain from it? I mean, it's like you're destroying.
Well, I'm raising the issue for two reasons. One, because I will not continue to talk about politics as usual on this show. I find it to be boring after we elected a president. It's enough already. I'm not simply going to read gossip from the internet and call it a radio show. If I can avoid it, I will avoid it. I think there are far more interesting and important things to do after the election. And right now I'm focusing on one of my interests, which is, in this case, saving these magnificent creatures. There will be other shows like this, perhaps not as invigorating as this one, but similar to it, because that's where I want to go in the next year. I want to get off the internet. I want to get off the websites. I want to stop every day Trump, 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 Democrat, liberal, liberal, Democrat, Trump, 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 liberal. It's enough already. How much can we take of it? It's not interesting to me. It's brain killing. And moreover, I feel that radio is such a powerful, intimate medium that we can make a difference. And with an audience of this size, we can make a real difference. And I could see by the number of calls I have gotten today that this is not a subject that's marginal to my audience. It's just what I suspected it would be. It's hit a real raw nerve with my audience, including yourself. And I hope that you're not disappointed in the last hour and a half of this program.
Not at all. Not at all. And I think it goes further that the media, not including you, of course, but the media almost like tries to humanize demons and evil thoughts and actions. Whereas then they also turn around and try to demonize real humans trying to do things about these issues and doing what's right.
And I know that they demonize them. What they do is ridicule people who try to save the whales and call them names such as environmental wackos or a tree hugger. That's an easy way of dismissing somebody like Paul Watson, who has given his entire life to doing exactly that thing. This man, I'm sure, could have made many fortunes had he put his mind to making just money. And I'm going to hope to lobby someone or some people inside the Trump administration in the coming months on this issue In fact, if there was an internal position on this, I would lobby that position, not to be that person, but to lobby that person to do everything we can to save the whales. How do you like that? I think it'd be great for Trump. Wouldn't that be a great campaign for him to show himself to be a man who actually cares about wildlife? That would be terrific. Terrific. Okay, George in Florida, where I'm going to be next week. George on WFTL, line 3. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, I'm a big fan. I'm also an underwater filmmaker, and I've spent the last 3 years during the winter filming whales underwater in the Dominican Republic. And these are incredible animals. They look at you like they can understand what you're thinking. They are so huge, but when they swim by you, they move their tails and their fins in such a way that they don't come in contact with you. They won't hurt you. They're incredible creatures. And in the process of filming them, I'm sure I'm working on a feature film about the story of a little girl who makes friends with a whale. So I'm working on it from a different angle than Paul Watson, from the big political spectrum down to a personal level. When people get to meet these creatures and see them firsthand, there's a natural affinity, a love that develops between you and these incredible creatures.
You know, there's a movie out that came out a few years ago called The Deep Sea or The Deep Blue Sea about a whale ship that gets capsized by a whale way back in the 1850s or 1840s and how the crew survives. Did you see that particular film where they kill one of the whales in the pod and the big whale, the bull whale, comes after the whaling ship and throws it over and breaks the ship? What an amazing piece of production that is. But anyway, that's a fictional version. What kind of movies have you done recently?
Well, I'm working on this film. It's called Joanna and the Whale. It's a modern-day version of the Jonah and the Whale story, bringing the biblical story into modern times where a little girl gets rescued from the sea by whales. I'm also on another film about sharks called The Shark Whisperer, but I'm an underwater...
Whoa. So where are you located in Florida, George?
I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Well, I'm not going to be far from you, God willing, next week. I'd like to... Where can we see any of your movies? I mean, are they available or what?
If you go to CCAM, SEA-CAM.com, you can see the trailers for both of those films.
It's amazing.
And learn more
about... Well, look, maybe if I have time next week, are you going to be in town? Because I'll give you a call. Perhaps we can get together and talk about whales. When you were talking about them, I heard your voice break up. And that's because you probably had some emotional feelings at that moment. Am I correct?
Very much so. My stepdaughter came with me on one of these trips, and she swam with the whales. And she got between a mother and its calf, and usually that's a pretty dangerous scenario. But when the mother saw that she was being gentle and non-threatening, she gently lifted my daughter up out of the water and pushed her away from the baby without, you know, so much as giving her a scratch.
Amazing.
40-ton animal.
That's truly amazing.
These are incredible creatures, and they deserve to live, and we deserve to learn more about them.
Well, I think I've touched a lot of people today in a different way because we need to get away from the normal political humdrum that we've all been trapped in for over a year now, and perhaps we can do some good on talk radio. Before you leave, give my guys your email, and I'll get in touch with you. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to Michael Savage and the Savage Nation on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Beyond the sea, 55 minutes after the hour, Savage Nation, very little time remains. The bigger context of this program is the issue of the conservative movement living in a dead past, an imaginary dead past, because a true conservative movement is actually a conservation movement along the lines of Teddy Roosevelt. So when you hear people ridiculing anyone who wants to save the whales and calling us names such as environmental wacko, tree hugger, or sneering, what they're doing is projecting their own ignorance and their own insecurities. Because the idea of protecting wildlife should actually be something that we conservatives do and not give it over to the liberals who very often use these emotional issues to inveigle us with regulations and things of that nature. Okay? Well, I think I've covered the waterfront here. It's Great that many of you were touched by the show. I'm getting emails from the people that I know well, who I respect, who are really moved by this, and some of them are really hardcore conservatives, have been working in the environmental, in the so-called conservative movement for 40 years. And they say exactly what I'm saying, which is that this is the greatest show you've done in a long time, and that many of those in the so-called conservative movement who are doctrinaire conservatives are frankly living in a dead past. Well, we want to live in a living present and a living future. And one of the things I want to do is lobby the Trump administration to protect the whales, to make certain that the poachers of elephants are found and executed. And I actually think I may be able to do that by some of the rumblings that I am hearing. It's not exactly what you may think it is coming out of the tower. It may be something else indeed. So there may be hope yet in ways we cannot imagine. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back for another hour right here on the program. I hope you'll join us at 855-407-2282. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Old man rhythm is in my shoe. It's no use to sitting and singing the blues.
Not done in harmony with my cetacean brain today. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm not ready. I know it's themed. The theme is river, but the sound is too staccato. Now that we have saved the nation, we can start saving the environment and save the whales. But before we go back to some of the other topics, there is a headline from the Drudge Report that I can't resist discussing for a minute. You know how we've been hearing that Russia hacked elections in America? Well, guess what? There's a new thought that it may be an inside job from the Department of Homeland Security. Gee, I'm shocked. Isn't that the way it was done in the old Soviet Union? Isn't that the way old Obama came to power? Old dirty tricks, oh. Georgia's Secretary of State says cyber attacks traced to DHS addresses. No kidding. No kidding. The federal government itself was hacking into states. Amazing. 10 attacks traced to DHS. Old Jay Johnson. Old Jay Johnson was a merry old soul. A merry old soul was he. Well, anyway, that's a little bit of the political news out there. We know that the Silicon Valley's pirates went into the tower today. The very tech gods who try to destroy Trump were invited into the tower, again, in light of triangulating the enemy, I suppose. There they were, the very people who spied on us, the very people who spit on us, the very people who spit on Trump were rewarded with a visit to Trump. Well, go figure. That's the way it seems to be working these days. And that's why I'm focusing on whales rather than politicians. Because the Bible tells us, trust no politician, incidentally. If you read the Bible very carefully, it tells you, trust no politician, my friends. That means no politician. Let's take some calls on the Savage Nation. KUGN in Oregon, Al on line 4. Go ahead, please.
How do you do, Dr. Savage? You just rock my day with this program. I've always known... When I first got turned on to you, you were talking about sending money over to Africa to ambush poachers, and I loved your position at that point. You are absolutely right. Conservative, conservation. That is the hook. If the conservative move...
That's right, and the problem is that many confused people think that if you're a conservative, you have to attack environmentalists. And there's some truth to that, because most of the environmental movement has been taken over by con men who are running it as basically a machine, a money machine. And they inject socialism, world government, Marxism into their campaigns. And as a result, they've alienated the entire conservative voter base. That doesn't mean that we, who are on the conservative side, should issue the environment and the environmental issues. In fact, the opposite is true, and that's why I've been talking about saving the whales and the other animals that we talked about today. And thank you for listening from Eugene, Oregon. Susan, WFJX in Virginia, line two. Go ahead, please. You're next up.
Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Savage. It's a great pleasure to speak with you again. I called you a couple of months ago, and I said to you, thank you so much, because every day you take us on a different journey. When we get to the end of the road, we either take a right or a left. And I think when you love God, you love all of his creatures and his creation. And I am so glad that you talked about this today, and also the elephants. I'm a big lover of elephants, and I'm definitely going to do a donation for Mr. Watson.
Isn't that nice?
What he's doing.
Well, that's right, and we have to understand that there comes a point in human evolution that we have to evolve in our observations about not only ourselves or about the Earth or about the cosmos, but the animals on it. They're not all there for our pleasure or to just kill them to eat them. And maybe the Bible says that, and it does, and I've just reread Genesis for the God book that I'm doing. Well, there are other things in the Bible I don't happen to agree with. Does it make me an anti-God, anti-religious person? No, I would say people have to evolve past the original message. I mean, we don't kill adulterers anymore, do we? Do we kill homosexuals? Not unless you're a retrograde throwback Islamist. And so there are many things in the Bible that have to be taken in the context of the times. And one of them is, therefore go forth and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So what does it actually mean? What does dominion mean? Does dominion mean you slaughter them mercilessly and eat them? I don't think so. In fact, I would interpret that to mean dominion means protecting them. And I thank you very much, Susan. See, I just wrote a little couple of paragraphs of my God book. So, my friends, what would you like to talk about? WBOB out in Florida. Phil, line 9 from Jacksonville. Go ahead, please.
Sir, just to carry on your conversation with that the gentleman was having about whales, me and my grandfather were checking frats probably 40 miles off the coast of Maui. We'd go down. He had a ritual. He'd go every Sunday. We were descending down probably 40, maybe 50 feet down. I never went really much further than that. And we would look at each other as we would descend, and I could see in his eyes, I felt something, I didn't see it, but I felt the hair stand up on my arms, and it was exactly a bull shark that was, you know, looking at us for prey. But what was interesting is these group of whales, probably three or four, they had hung there, you know, they were, but he actually would go out there and swim with them. Those whales actually saved us, because the bull shark had actually came and charging him and knocked him. It didn't try and bite him, but it took its body and knocked him. In fact, it knocked him into me, and I was trying to put air in my vest along with him to get to the surface. I had my eyes on the surface, but those whales, I did manage to see the one whale actually chasing as if he was going to ram the bull shark. When we hit the surface, I was probably 5 feet away from the ladder and the swim platform, and that whale was beneath us, blocking us from any, you know, from any attack from that bull shark. And I never went again. I mean, I never went again. That cured me from ever, you know, going down into the water. In fact, I won't even go out in the ocean past my knees anymore because of that. My grandpa,
I know. My mother wouldn't swim in anything but a swimming pool. I kind of get it. I understand that.
There's no question.
No, that's a heck of a story you just told. Now, I want to just see if I got it all, Phil. You were with your grandfather, and you were doing what in the ocean off Maui?
He had traps. He had traps. Like off coral reef, you know, he would trap crabs and all kinds of different things.
I see. So you would just, but in the interim, he used to swim with the whales, who then came to know him and then came to save you from the bull shark.
He was very familiar with those whales. I was there on vacation. I was only there for 10 days, but yes, he knew those whales. I mean, he would get in the water and swim with them. They knew him. In fact, you know, it took me a few times, but I did jump in. I was.
How old were you at the time of this incident, and how old was your grandfather?
He was probably in his 60s, and I was probably 18, 19.
So that was quite a while ago, eh?
Yeah, it was probably 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I'd went over there on vacation. He was in the military and then retired, and he was actually in Pearl Harbor. Not, I don't know if he was in the war or not, but he definitely was in the Navy and served in Pearl Harbor. So
you were amazed, I guess, by this call to see that these animals recognized them, I think what you're saying.
No,
and then moved into protect you from that shark.
No doubt. Listen, when I hit the ladder, my heart was beating. You know, I was injecting air into my BCD, which is your vest. I was trying to get to the surface. I kept looking down. Well, when I looked, it took me a minute to realize. I thought it was the bull shark that was going to, you know, hit us. I did see the shark. It was probably 15 feet. One of the whales out there were like twice its size, and they put the fear of God in that bull shark.
That's an amazing story. So the bottom line is you don't even wait in the ocean anymore, huh?
You
don't have to convince me. When I go to Florida, I have a little trouble swimming out into the ocean. I still have an insight. I don't know, there's something about swimming out in the ocean and wondering what's underneath me.
Oh, yeah, they will get with you. And I'll tell you what, it was all I could do. So when I hit that ladder and I looked down, I realized that it wasn't the bull shark, that it was the whale, and it was beneath us making sure that shark couldn't.
Well, you know, this is quite a whale of a story, Phil, and I certainly do appreciate it. And I'm going to send you, for the best story of the day, a copy of Teddy and Me, which is a whale of a dog story. I hope you'll enjoy that and stay on the line to receive Teddy and Me, a great gift for the holidays, by the way. My little whale is walking around the room as I talk. My little poodle, Teddy, and I do the show together every day. And when I look at him, I have a universal feeling for all creatures, big and small, including mankind. That's the beauty of animals, isn't it? When we play with our animals, we are connected to all the animals, not just that animal. So what would you like to talk about in addition to this on the Savage Nation? WABC Maria, thanks for holding line 6. You're up. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, and I'm very excited to be here. I liked your comment. I liked you bringing up the environmental issue, because you're very right. Many Republicans, many conservatives do not talk about this issue. It's passed off, and people turn their nose up at it. But it's important, because this Earth is all that we have.
It's not inconsistent for a person to be a political conservative and a conservationist. In fact, they're unified. They're brother and sister issues. They're brother and sister in so many ways. It's not an issue that should be controlled by the so-called radical left. We should control that issue. That's why I'm doing this today, Maria.
I'm thankful, and I like the fact that you brought up the word dominion, and you're talking about your God book. I had a classical education, and we learned Latin growing up, and dominion, I mean, while it means comes probably from the word, you know, dominus, lord, master, you're going to get other meanings with that. That can mean caretaker. That can mean protector. You know, it goes along with the term.
That is so beautiful. I'm so glad that you called on the Latin root of the word dominion, because in reading the Bible, in the English translation, it says, yes, we should have dominion over all the creatures, but as I intimated, that doesn't mean slaughter them and put them into cans. Or leave them bloody in the water simply because you want to eat them or turn them into clothing. Dominion could be protecting them, couldn't it?
Yes, exactly. And that, you get so much more out of the Bible and out of any text, scientific included, that you read when you realize the root words can lead you to a whole wealth of...
Well, I was studying the Ten Commandments last night for the God book, and I was trying to explain in the book that when it says, thou shalt not kill, for example... People don't know that the Hebrew word for kill is different than the Hebrew word for murder, because the actual word says thou shalt not murder. It doesn't say thou shalt not kill. Killing is permissible from a biblical point of view in self-defense, in times of war. You are allowed to kill. You're just not allowed to murder. That's much different than kill, and it's a matter of the word itself. Isn't that correct? I'm sure as a scholar of the Latin, perhaps you've read the Hebrew as well.
That is absolutely correct. I have not delved in the Hebrew as much as the Latin. I'm more familiar with the Latin, but it's absolutely correct. The distinction between the two words is important, because you get many people who will say, oh, you shall not kill. Any killing is wrong, which is erroneous. It's not the case.
Not the case at all. There's a time to live, a time to die, a time to kill. If you listen to Turn, 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 which is an amazing song directly out of the passage from the Bible itself, And it does enable our warriors to go out and do what they have to do to protect all of us, which is to kill the enemy and kill them as quickly and as often as possible. I'm going to send you a copy of that wonderful book about doggies. It's a great dog story about a man and his dog. And it's called Teddy and Me, and I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to Michael Savage. Coming up at 3, it's Mark Levin on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
You know, ever since I've been in radio, there's been a theme in the so-called conservative media that somehow we conservatives are oafish with regard to other living creatures. And, you know, there's some truth to that as well. And we've heard people say, I don't protect animals, I eat them. You know, make you a real man. That makes you a real man sitting there in your tower screaming about that. Or what are you, a real man? Everything that crawleth, you killeth. Oh, there's a worm crawling across the ground. I'm a great conservative. Let me crush it under my shoe. I'll kill everything that crawls and walks because I'm a powerful man. Because I have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that creepeth upon the earth. I crush bugs with my conservative boot. I love to hear the snap of the beetle's back as I step on it. I mean, is that what conservatism is? I hope not. It could be the opposite, by the way. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Is that it's okay to be a political conservative and to be a conservationist. That is what I'm trying to explain on the program today, and I'm starting from the top of the food chain with the whales. I may get down to the bugs eventually. I don't know where I'm going to go with this, but today was the first of many programs to follow, believe me. Yeah, it's a great topic for me. Michelle, KKOH out of Reno, go ahead, please. Have your say.
Hey there. I'm so pleased to talk to you. What an honor. I'm a conservative, and I always have been. And to me, I catch so much flack from the people that I know about being a tree hugger also. They seem to not connect the two. We should be conserving. You know, we don't...
That's right. We, the conservatives, should conserve, not kill. That's in plain English what it is. You're up there in Reno where they're killing bears, for example, up in the Lake Tahoe Basin. Am I correct?
Yes, I don't know a lot about that.
Oh, that's a huge issue up there. People's hearts are being broken by the wanton slaughter of bears up in the Tahoe Basin. There's a lot to talk about the humane control of bears, for example, as opposed to the slaughter of bears. But I think we'll get to that in another time. Yes, as a conservative, you can be a conservationist. You don't have to become an oafish pig who says, I'm a conservative, ho, 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 therefore I don't care about the tree huggers and save the whales. Leave that for the hippies. Leave it for the hippies out there. Well, that's such a primitive, embarrassing attitude to take, Michelle. Anyway, I'm glad you don't take it. I'm sending you a great dog story called Teddy and Me today for the holidays. Well, time is just a flying here. We've been talking to the man who founded the Sea Shepherd program. He was on for an hour and a half where he talked about saving the whales and other creatures for that matter. And I hope we've done enough to make you try to make a donation to them. I'm not looking to raise any money for me. And I'm going to talk about saving the whales to the Trump administration when the time is right. How do you like that? Maybe we will find a newfound friend in ways we could never understand. I've been an environmentalist or conservationist for most of my life. How about you?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
It is the Savage Nation, and I'm focusing today on the cruelty of whaling. Whales are the largest animals on the planet, which means killing them is very, very hard. The practice of whale hunting is one of unimaginable cruelty. They are also social animals. They know when they're being killed. And their friends in the pod know when their mother is being killed and pulled apart by the vermin from Norway. The vermin, the filth from Japan, the lowest form of humanity, are these whalers. They're the last remnant of a Neanderthal past. They're worse than ISIS. They're worse than ISIS because the whales have no guns. the whales have no way to protect themselves. They're some of the most gentle creatures on the planet. You ask people to go on whale watching, and you understand, like, people go in California to Mexico to watch whale watching, where they know that they're safe, because the vermin from Japan can't kill them off the coast of Mexico. The lowlifes from Russia can't kill them off Mexico. The Norwegian lowlife homicidal maniacs can't kill whales down there in Mexico. So the whales have become friendly. And they come up to the tour boats and they actually rub their backs on the keel of the boats. And they pull up next to the boats and they open their big eye the size of a saucer. And they look in the eyes of the people looking at them because they're social animals. And they love human beings. And then we reward them for this love and this trust by butchering them in the most horrendous way you could ever imagine. We have to stop the cruelty of killing these animals. The demand for whale meat is falling, but still there are throwbacks in Japan who love it. And despite bans on commercial whaling that have been accepted by most countries, the evil throwbacks in Japan, Norway, and Iceland kill 2,000 whales between them each year and continue to trade in whale products, and I'm going to try and stop it. I was a very active protector of medicinal plants in rainforests for many years. I devoted my whole life to it at great cost to my family. It all worked out in the long run. But I could have been investing in real estate in Harlem in the years that I was trekking in the jungles of the South Pacific saving plants in rainforests. Oh, yeah, I could have invested in cheap real estate in Manhattan and been a big shot. I could have had a tower probably if I wanted it. But I've done well enough anyway. God has rewarded me because I followed what was right. Well, now I've decided what I'm going to do with whatever time I have left on this earth. I'm going to now focus all my attention on protecting the innocent whales, the innocent elephants, the innocent bears, and all of the other innocent creatures that are being butchered in the most inhumane way you could ever imagine. Are you a conservative and you're going to laugh at this and tell me you eat hamburgers and it doesn't matter? Well, my friends, think very carefully because you are the whale. The environment is considered a laughingstock to most doctrinaire conservatives. Knee-jerk conservatives think that anyone who tries to save the environment is an environmental wacko, a commie. This is the opinion that passes for intelligent discourse, when in fact it's our job as keepers of the planet, as shepherds of the planet, to protect the planet and all of its inhabitants, humans included, but not excluding the great animals such as whales, bears, tigers, rhinos, you get the picture, elephants. One of the reasons that conservatives have turned off from the environmental issues is because the environmental movement has largely been taken over by communists who call themselves progressives, and they've used scare tactics and threats and whatnot to beat anyone up who doesn't agree with their flawed conclusions. Now, to turn this into a political show for a moment, President Trump, or incoming President Trump, has just appointed the president of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. He has enormous power. The Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson, is number one in Eagle Scout. That's the first thing I'm going to tell you about him, if you look up his history. That's very important that you understand why that's important. Eagle Scout, that means he's been in touch with the earth. He knows something more about the earth than the average doctrinaire knee-jerk conservative who rarely steps outside of his own comfort zone, either the radio studio or a bulletproof house with bodyguards. So Tillerson has done, you know, his share of investigating the earth. He is probably a warmist to some extent, and you're going to hear more about this from the Trump campaign. I can guarantee you as I stand here, the meetings with Al Gore by Ivanka, the appointment of Tillerson, you can guarantee, almost guarantee what's coming is going to shock many of you. But Trump is going to come out and say that, yeah, there is warming, but they're going to play it both ways. They're going to whipsaw you. They're going to say, just like ExxonMobil did, yes, there is evidence of man-made global warming here and there, but we don't believe in carbon credits. Okay, good. Now, having told you what's coming, I'm going to give you some scientific evidence on some of these issues, to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that there's almost nothing we can do to stop the trend towards a warming trend, because there is no warming trend. In fact, there's a cooling trend, but you don't want to scare people with that one. I want to talk about the evidence to the contrary of that presented by the great, great PhD scientist Leon DiCaprio in Trump Tower a few weeks ago. We know that Leon DiCaprio, in between acting the role of playboy or drug dealer or murderer, all around bad boy, somehow earned his doctorate somewhere along the way, we suppose, and he's an expert on global warming. In between flying on his Gulfstream and being on his yacht, he became an expert on global warming in between the girls and the yachts. But I think Leo may benefit from the actual science. Many of you have read Government Zero, my book before Scorched Earth. And if you read that, you know what I'm going to be talking about. It's a piece of evidence that must be included in any and all discussions about so-called man-made global warming, Vostok ice core samples. I want to come back to the big issue of the environment, liberals and conservatives, and how we speak different languages on this. First of all, the important thing for you to know is that we on the conservative side of the band should own the environment. We should own the environmental issue. We shouldn't have let the Marxists take control of this issue with the scare tactics that have frankly hit them in the face. Because other than the academics and the businessmen who make a fortune off the global green mafia, very few people believe any of the statements that are being made because they've been making statements that are untrue. We all know that the evidence has been skewed, lied about, made up. The hockey stick data, for example. Does that mean that we as conservatives should just walk away from the whole issue and laugh about it and go about eating our cheeseburgers and say anyone who wants to save the trees or save the air or save the waters or save the elephants or save the whales is a commie wacko? Well, do so at your own risk of being a moron. If you want to think like a Neanderthal from another era, go ahead. But you see, I own the environmental issue. There is no one else in talk radio, nobody else in talk radio, who has my credentials to talk about it. And instead of hiding my background, why should I hide what I'm proud of? Why should I hide what I've labored so hard, the fields I've labored so hard in? First of all, without boasting too much, just a little bit, my plant collections, my botanical collections, are in 7 museums around the world, including a museum in London that I cannot visit owing to the communists who run England. But put that aside. My plant collections are in Russia. Oh, yeah, that means I'm a Russian spy. But my plant collections are also in the Bronx Botanical Gardens, the Bishop Museum in Honolulu, and many other places. The point is that 7 different collections of my plant collections are in different museums. Now, why is that important? Because if you're a plant collector and you're close to the earth and you observe botanical species over a long period of time and you compare them with past samples of these botanical species, you get to see certain things. Well, I've seen certain things and drawn certain observations. So I've worked in the environmental field going way back into the 1970s. In fact, one of my earliest and most popular books was called Plant a Tree, a plan for regreening America. I worked on that for 3 years, and I went city to city, state to state, and came up with plans for regreening America because I was like a Johnny Appleseed at that time. So I've been deeply involved in this. I've saved portions of little rainforests here and there. So it's important you know that this is not a Johnny-come-lately thing. And I'm putting myself out front on this because you're going to notice a change in me in 2017. I'm not just going to sit here and read websites, gossip from the websites on the internet, and turn it into radio shows. That's over. How much can you take of that? You can do it yourself. That's called talk radio by the numbers. It's a John Nagy radio show. Read a headline, make believe you wrote it, ask the people who are listening what they think about it, and go brush your teeth while they're answering you. We've all done it. It's time to put it behind us, and let's do something meaningful with the power of the broadcast world that we live in. And so, as I say, today we're going to focus on our great, great creatures, the cetaceans, the whales. Why is it important for us to save the whales? Why do you give a darn about a whale? Why do you care about that? Well, if you studied ecology many years ago, you came to understand that we're all part of a large ecosystem. Whether you know it or not, even if you live in an insulated world of your own making, you're part of a larger ecosystem. You as a man, you as a woman, you're part of a large harmonium of living creatures. The earth itself is a living organism. And so when you come to understand what deep ecology actually means, you understand that if you poison the earth for whatever the reason may be, and you crack the eggshell of an eagle, and the eagle can no longer reproduce, you are the eagle. While the eagle starts to die off and you don't care about it because you're not an eagle, you realize that one day you'll be poisoned by the same poison that was used to poison the earth that made the eggs too thin for eagles to hatch. And so that's what we mean by deep ecology. So that brings us back to the whales. Why do we permit in the year 2016 these throwbacks from Japan, from Russia, from Norway, from Finland to kill these magnificent creatures which have almost been hunted to extinction? Why does anyone on this earth need to kill a whale? There is no reason for it. It's pure unadulterated throwback behavior. Now, it ties into the Trump campaign in many different ways. Trump, again, I will repeat again, has just appointed Mr. Tillerson to be Secretary of State. Mr. Tillerson is a former Eagle Scout, but more importantly, he is the chairman and CEO of Mobil Exxon, which has business interests drilling all over the planet. Mr. Tillerson has gone on record as a spokesman for Mobil Exxon, saying that he does believe there's evidence of global warming, but, and the big but is whatever he wants to make it into be. That's a very clever way of triangulating the opposition, is that you throw them a bone, you say that their positions have validity, but then you undermine them by not doing anything about it. I understand that. Look, if I thought that we could stop a trend towards warming or cooling as human beings, I would say it. The evidence does not support that, not at all. Does that mean I love pollution? I hate it. There is no man on earth who hates air pollution more than I do. I've run all over the globe to get away from pollution. I remember when I lived in Queens, New York when I was young. I remember when I lived in Forest Hills, New York before I left Forest Hills, New York. I left because the air was polluted. I couldn't stand it. Why was the air polluted in Queens at the time? Because they had no environmental laws to stop people from burning garbage in the incinerators in the apartment buildings in Queens, New York. And so you'd wake up to this horrendous soot that was falling all over the street, which you were inhaling, and I knew that if I stayed there, I would be sick, I would die a premature death, and I left for more pristine lands. Well, where are we today with regard to environmental regulations? Where are we today? Have we gone too far? Have we gone far enough? Do we actually understand this? And where will Trump go with this? I would think that he's going to move radically in directions you'll never, ever believe. He's going to embrace the Al Gore view of global warming. That's why he had Al Gore in the tower. That's why he had Leon DiCaprio in the tower. He's going to push the big lie, and then he's going to back off and say this or that, not do anything about it. That's going to be the game that's being played. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Well, we've been saving the whale. I really could do a show called Save the Trump Administration from Itself, because it's at a war with itself. We have two factions fighting against each other. We have the conservative side, as represented by our good friend from the website called Breitbart. And on the other side, we have the old gang from the RNC, as represented by old Rinso Priebus. And as I mentioned to you, and took a big chance in doing so, and was excommunicated for doing so, I knew this was going to happen. The Republican National Committee has, in fact, hijacked the Trump campaign, the Trump transition team, and they're making appointments that will make your hair fall out of your head. Trump picks Michigan's Rona Romney McDaniel for RNC chair. That means Rinso Priebus picked that one. Here's another one to show you what Rinso is doing. Trump considers ex-lobbyist and a Bush official for trade role. That means Jeb Bush won. That means Romney won. That means Rinso won. That means Rinso is actually running the country right now. Now, do you think I would have spent 1 year of my life campaigning actively on a daily basis for Donald Trump if I thought that I was going to put back in power Mitch McConnell, the gobbler from Kentucky? How many times have I told you they screwed us in 2012, they're doing it again? Do you have to now support everything Trump does, or else you're going to be called a communist or a backstabber? Are you people crazy? Yes, we're real happy that he put real military in very important positions. Yes, I'm happy to see that a former Navy SEAL has been picked for the Interior Department. But where is it going to end with regard to the Rinso people from the old RNC giving us everything that we voted against when we voted for Trump? When is this going to end? When are we, the people who put Trump in power, going to stand up and say, no, we're not going to take it? Well, I don't think it's going to happen too soon. I think it's going to take a long time for the true believers to understand that they've been hoodwinked to a certain extent. And in that article, many of you were very disappointed. But I have to call them like I see them. And I did. And I will. And I will auction off the umbrella that was to have been used at the inauguration, on Inauguration Day, right here on the Savage Nation. And the high bid will go to the Sea Shepherd Foundation. That's right. On the day of the inauguration, as I said to Mr. Trump many times when he just visited the show, well, I'm saving that umbrella, Mr. Trump. Don't worry, you'll need it, Michael. Well, I do need it, but not for the inauguration. It'll be auctioned off for a good cause, rather than to shed rain from my back. That's it for the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.